Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Jodie Jacobson, who's President and Editor-in-Chief of RH Reality Check, and a longtime leader in the health and development community, and an advocate with extensive experience in public health, gender equity, human rights, environment, and demographic issues. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jodie Jacobson.
Thank you for having me.
And the Supreme Court heard arguments today from they're taking up this case. One of the plaintiffs, I guess, is Hobby Lobby, which is a chain of craft stores owned by a Christian family, and the other is the Conestoga Wood Specialties, which makes wood cabinets, and that's owned by a Mennonite family. And this, I take it, it could be a real Pandora's box if the Supreme Court rules in favor of Hobby Lobby. Because couldn't it open up questions about religious exemptions for example, immunizing your kids and stuff like that? Will it stop?
I think it's really important to understand that the implications of the case, as you note, go well beyond contraception. I mean, it's bad enough that they're seeking to exempt themselves from a major form of primary reproductive health care for women. And that has a lot of roots in what's going on around reproductive health care more generally in the United States. But yes, it absolutely can have much broader implications. If you remember recently, for example, there was a law that was vetoed by Governor Jan Brewer in Arizona, which sought to allow businesses to decide to deny services to gay, lesbian, and transgender people if they had a religious objection to gay, lesbian, and transgender people. So this kind of thing, this kind of behavior, this kind of discrimination, whether it be in a healthcare, vaccination, you know, eliminating child care benefits because they think women should stay at home, or discriminating against gay people, or not providing providing health care to AIDS patients because, you know, they believe that an AIDS patient was infected by HIV through sex, and they don't believe in sex. I mean, all of these things now become open for question.
Well, there is a law, is there not? The Religious Freedom Restoration Act that was signed by Bill Clinton.
Yes.
And how does that impact on the parameters of this case, do you think, Jodie?
What's happened is that ever since that law was signed into law, the religious right has been using every ounce of energy they have, and they're being helped by corporate donors to expand exemptions to everything, for conscience clauses. Most recently, for example, in Virginia, where the Governor McAuliffe signed into law a law that allows genetic counselors to deny giving proper information on genetic counseling if they feel like the outcome is not one consistent with their religious belief. So there's so many different ways in which these things are creeping into law, in which the far right is using the basis of RFRA to expand upon it and to turn it into something that, in effect, turns the United States into a Christian nation as they see it.
So do we have any polling on the justices, the extent to which they are, any of them, a part of this idea of a Christian nation, which is, you know, there's quite a lot of literature on it. And there's, I mean, I know, for example, Ted Cruz's father is a part of that movement. But do you think any of that stuff resonates with the justices on the court?
Well, unfortunately, I think it does resonate with some of them, including Scalia and Justice Roberts, Chief Justice Roberts, certainly, and then to a certain extent with others. So, you know, I fear that the court is, that for one thing, this is a court that is very isolated, you know, largely, not only, but, you know, the majority of the single largest group is mainstream white males who are have shown a lack of understanding, particularly about the struggles that women face and about their reproductive health. So I have no real confidence in those people about making a sound decision based both on science and equity. I'm afraid that what they are going to do is make an equivalency out of the arguments put forth by the far right, as well as those put forth by the corporations in Citizens United. So they will, I'm afraid there's a good chance that they will err on the side of the so-called religious liberty argument.
Again, I'm speaking with Jodi Jacobson, who's president and editor-in-chief of RH Reality Check. She's a longtime leader in the health and development community and an advocate with extensive experience in public health, gender equity, human rights, environment, and demographic issues. And in terms of the Supreme Court hearing this case, where they're weighing whether business owners can object to part of President Obama's healthcare law, which, of course, they've upheld, the contraception mandate itself does include exemptions for churches, and it makes accommodations for religiously affiliated nonprofits such as schools and hospitals. But for-profit corporations like Hobby Lobby, et cetera, are required to cover the full range of women's preventative care, including birth control and IUDs and emergency contraception, and at no cost to their female employees. Now, you would think that in the business world, it's like, almost like the press. You know, one of the reasons why we have in our press in this country, you have the opinion of one side and then the equal and opposite opinion of the other. In many ways, that has its roots in a recognition on the part of media companies that half of your customers or half of your readers or viewers are Republicans and half of them are Democrats. So in order not to offend either Democrats or Republicans, you always have, in quotes, balance, you know, not fair and balanced like Fox, but you know what I'm talking about. So why doesn't that restrain Hobby Lobby? I mean, why are they the outlier here?
Why doesn't the press's giving both sides?
Why doesn't the corporation, understanding that, you know, if you're going to start proselytizing with your product, you're going to lose a lot of customers. And that seems to be a sort of natural restraint on business, not to get involved in politics, you know. So,
I think that, in fact, that might be the sort of conventional wisdom about conventional corporations.
Right.
But we're talking about the religious right, and they have their own worldview. They have their own customer base. They also have, as we've shown in reporting this week, a substantial amount of money coming to them from corporate donors and dark money sources like the Koch brothers. We published an investigative piece that looked at, for example, who are the funds behind many of these contraceptive mandate cases, and they are folks from far-right corporate leadership. So, you know, I think that it's a very different calculus when you have an agenda to really and truly transcend what democracy is and create a sort of, you know, religious state, which is their end goal. Then you're not really worried about in the short term whether you're going to piss off some customers.
So is it then possible that the Koch brothers, who I don't know, are famous for their religiosity as for their, to put it bluntly, greed, are they getting in on the act and funding these cases just to destroy the Affordable Care Act, which they clearly are opposed to?
Yes, they've come together to destroy the Affordable Care Act overall, but, you know, they're also very much linked into a whole host of other efforts together, such as cutting Social Security, blocking efforts to raise the minimum wage. There are so many different areas in which these groups are interlocked, and they really have what I would call as an anti-life agenda. If you put them together as what they should be, which is, you know, they're sort of different branches of the same family tree.
So what's the sense then, Jodi Jacobson, of how the Solicitor General handled his arguments? I mean, obviously you can never figure out from these hearings exactly which way the court's going to go, but what impression did you get in terms of the way the government, you know, the case is Sebelius versus Hobby Lobby? So how did Varelli do?
Well, to be honest with you, I just had started reading the transcripts, which I've just gotten hold of, and I wasn't in the courtroom or in the media center at the Supreme Court, so I didn't hear all the ins and outs. One thing I am concerned about is that I did get the sense that the Solicitor General, and I fear much of the administration, doesn't really have its own very strong grasp on both the economic issues behind access to birth control, as well as the health components of birth control, in the sense that, you know, they tend also to play on the field of, is it an abortifacient or isn't it? You know, rather than making clear that here's what the science says, this is not abortifacient, and here we're talking about denying women, primary preventive care. And I still feel like they don't really get the arguments where they need to be.
Well, you'd think, though, with what just took place in Arizona that you mentioned earlier, Jody Jacobson, the Arizona's so-called religious freedom bill, which the governor finally vetoed, even though she was a part of generating the bill, and she did that because business interests were pushed back. Surely that's got to be in the consciousness of people. I mean, if the Supreme Court rules in favor of Hobby Lobby, then laws like that will they are already on proliferating around the country at any rate. Arizona's not the only one that has this anti-gay bill, as far as I know. Wouldn't that just be an open season?
But I think that what's critical here is that the Supreme Court rule the right way so that these other laws can be stood up against a major decision by the court that, in fact, you know, religious liberty cannot be had by imposing the so-called religious beliefs of a corporation on its employees, which then redounds to other kinds of cases that we will see, you know, like the one you talked about, you know, discrimination against gay persons and so forth, that those things will have a precedent as against which to be measured, and a precedent that does not allow them, as opposed to allowing this and that becoming precedent, which I think will open the floodgates. I really think we'll see no end at all.
Well, was there a sense, though, that argument was made? I mean, I'm reading the transcripts too. I don't get the impression that.
I don't. Yeah. I don't get the impression, but like I say, I haven't gone through all of them yet.
Right. Well, but this is huge, isn't it? I mean, this is, I take it you're alarmed by it. I'm alarmed by it. I mean, most of our listeners should be, that this could be a huge Pandora's box.
Yes, absolutely. I totally agree with you.
Well, what are you going to do going forward now? I guess, what can you do? It's in the hands of these justices, right?
Well, you know, we're a media organization, so we can't necessarily do anything except do what we continue to do, which is unearth who's behind these things, continue to put forth the evidence, continue to ensure that all the people involved are clearly educated about the issues. You know, I think that the justices have their own biases and those need to be laid bare. We saw, for example, that Justice Scalia in another case called sidewalk protesters outside abortion clinics sidewalk counselors. Now, we have more than ample evidence that these folks are not counselors. In fact, the violence that they exhibit in much of their activity would belie the fact that they are not counselors. But you have a really, really strong, either a very strongly biased person or a person who is extraordinarily cocooned in another world, or both. And my concern is that, again, that these justices are not necessarily, you know, looking with an understanding, empathetic perspective of what these decisions really mean for people, and rather they are thinking about it from their own narrow perspectives. That's my concern.
Well, it's certainly reason to be concerned when Justice Scalia starts talking about, obviously, the morning after pill that he clearly objects to, and I mean, look at the trial that went through. How that so much effort was made by the registrar to stop that, which I understand is perfectly safe, and they've done everything in the world to try and restrict that. And having Justice Scalia bring it up is a little alarming, to say the least.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Well, I thank you for joining us, Jody, and thank you for your work.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me, Ian.
Hello again, I'm Ian Masters, and I'm just speaking then with Jody Jacobson, who is the President and Editor-in-Chief of RH Reality Check and a long-time leader in the health and development community and an advocate with extensive experience in public health, gender equity, human rights, environment, and demographic issues. We can take a brief station break. We'll be back talking about how in Washington it's the spooks and spies who shuffle the deck and deal the cards.